In today's episode, we discuss what is corporate citizenship and how has it evolved and been impacted by the world-changing events of the past year. We also look at what corporate citizenship practitioners should be thinking about and looking forward to in the near future. Let's make a social impact. So today we have two special guests. The first one you already know, Janelle St. Omer, who is the Regional Vice President at Benevity. And our other guest is Chris Jarvis, who is the co-founder of Realize Worth.
Thank you for having me today, Carl, and hello, everybody. I am thrilled to be back again with Chris Jarvis to speak on corporate citizenship and all the things that we've seen change over the last year. I think, Chris, you can agree, like most practitioners, the last year has really been an interesting time in terms of our work as CSR or corporate citizenship practitioners, whatever you call yourself. It's been an interesting time for all of us. So let's dig right into the conversation.
All right.
So, Chris, I think the first thing, would love to hear from you, your perspective. How has corporate citizenship changed over the last, I would say, 18 months?
Well, we did some work for a couple of companies we were working with. They wanted to sort of understand how other companies may have been shifting their dollars. And you, Benevity, also did an excellent report. And it was amazing to see the top 10 funding organization, some of them shifted around, right? Like St. Jude's, I think, dropped from number 2 to number 10 or something. So they stayed in the top 10. But what came up from out of nowhere, NCAAP and some Black Lives Movement work, and rightfully so, as well as pandemic-oriented or health-oriented stuff. That was for us, when we were looking at companies, that was the biggest shift. And what was also interesting is how companies were sort of influencing that shift. So if companies were signaling these were the most important things and these are legit organizations that we are funding as a company, we saw employee dollars follow that. In the moment of crisis, when I need a little bit of good framing to understand what's going on and make sense of it, sense making, that signal from the employer was very influential.
Absolutely. I would agree with you. I think, you know, we obviously saw it in some of our data and more conversations that I have with practitioners. There is an entirely different orientation, it feels like, 18 months later, you know, one around how companies fund organizations. So from that, you know, community investment or grants perspective, you know, more openness to partner, perhaps less, you know, hoops for a nonprofit to jump through. I think more of the concept of kind of trust-based philanthropy. Mm-hmm. You know, we certainly saw a lot of companies shift their definition of volunteering to, you know, acts of kindness, or expand their definition rather. As well, in addition to, as you said, some of the giving trends were really different over the last year with, you know, education, social justice causes, and, you know, long-term sort of humanitarian crisis organizations as it relates to COVID. So, you know, we're certainly seeing it as well. And I think that one of the big questions that a lot of folks have is this going to continue? Or do you think we're going to go back to where we were, you know, March the 10th, 2020, prior to our world changing? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we're going back. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, how we had the civil rights movement and we went back. I mean, we're going back. Mm-hmm. Part of it is a fairly colonial manifest destiny mixed up with charity philanthropy approach to giving that's in all of our systems more than anything. Did you see the movie on Netflix, Coded Bias?
I did not know.
Oh my gosh. This Black woman, she's sitting there and she's realizing the face recognition isn't working. She puts on a white mask. It recognizes the face. It can see the face, but it couldn't see her face. So this is how the documentary kicks off. Anyways, apparently we are putting all of our bias right into the AI and machine learning, and it's reproducing. And that got me to thinking, I'd be interested to know what you think. How companies and solution platforms structure giving is incredibly influential. And I'm wondering if inadvertently, the thing with hidden bias is you can't see it and you don't know you're doing it. So everybody gets let off the hook if you're doing it and you can't see it. But it doesn't let us off the hook from asking an important question. Am I influencing who gets money and who doesn't? for my company of 100,000 people? Am I single-handedly in how I'm building this program and structuring messages and buttons? Have I really thought through the way I'm framing the message so that I'm not, as an employer, signaling to you before now, the NCAAP, they're way down here. They're harder to find. They're at the bottom of the list. We don't think it's that important, so maybe you shouldn't either. Like, nobody would say that, right? But inadvertently... Right.
But it's absolutely happening. Even if you think of, you know, the way that companies will sometimes structure communications for a certain campaign, or, you know, within technology solutions, these are all tech solutions out there. You have something that's right there at the forefront of your carousel, as an example.
Yeah.
So that is you putting something at the forefront of your employees' attention to hopefully grab that attention. So with whatever biases, you know, the practitioners may or may not have, or how they've selected those organizations, or the messaging that they're communicating around the organizations for giving, volunteering, or otherwise that they're encouraging employees to support, there is inherent bias that's built into that. And I mean, companies, I think, historically have argued the fact that, well, you know, we need to support organizations that align to the bottom line of our business. But do you? I mean, that's a question that I've always asked. Yes, it makes sense if you're a bank that you do financial literacy programming. But I've often spoken to folks about, well, a big part of what your corporate story could be is we intentionally empower and get behind the choices of our people. And that is a core pillar of our program, in addition to financial literacy, as an example.
Okay. And then the hard work comes from how inclusive how inclusive are we in onboarding nonprofits to be found? Like, are we just bringing the regulars that everybody knows? Are we going out to those other ones doing really meaningful work? Are we being an inclusive partner kind of thing? That's a ton of, when you think about it, there's like a few thousand people in the country influencing to a significant level. I know corporate funding is only what do you know what it is? 5-10% of total giving in the United States?
I believe it's
small.
10. I don't remember off the top of my head, though.
Okay. Yes. But still, that's a lot of money that a small group of people are deciding who gets to, you know, deal with these issues in their community and who's dealing with other issues. But again, Benevity has done a great job. I remember back in the day, Brian, it's choice, choice, choice. And everybody's like, eh, I don't know if I want choice, choice, choice. It sounds like a lot of work and people are crazy and they're going to give the weird things. But relentlessly, with great temerity and tenacity, Benevity moved forward, and now that's the standard, choice, choice, choice. But still in that, you still have to curate it in a way that people can find out of 1.9 million nonprofits, you know.
You do, but I think that it also comes down to a few other things. So I think in some cases, it is how you are educating your employees as well, or encouraging them to, you know, take them on an experiential journey of learning, and then a specific call to action.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, there's only the call to action, you know, here's a campaign, make a donation, go out and volunteer. What about the learning of the needs in your community first and foremost, so that when something is presented to you in terms of this plethora of choices, you can actually make an educated decision as to your dollars or your time.
Absolutely. Yes, you should be saying that everywhere. Everybody should be saying that. We talk about experiential first learning, which means you have to have the experience in order to create the curiosity to really receive the information, which is exactly what you just outlined.
Yeah, it's really important. I think that oftentimes, you know, UX people will think about the journey of the end user in terms of using a technology, but, you know, other people, including CSR practitioners, we're designing experiences for our people. Mm-hmm. So how are we thinking through how we're designing those experiences? So how are we bringing them to the place where they are then going to make a decision to participate in a campaign or not? How are we exposing them to the service recipients at an organization, or the people who work at the organization, or the realities of the challenges that exist in a particular area, you know, right down the street from your office? Like, what are we doing to essentially make it real for individuals to actually understand the part that they can play in this broader sort of ecosystem of social issues that exist around us, you know?
Yeah. And if you understood that, if you took that perspective, and you thought about the part of the company that makes widgets and money, and then you thought about what you do, you are creating experiences, like you just said, where people can get informed, not telling them what to do, not telling them what to think, but get that experience, get the information, make some choices about where they sit with it. But you're defining a nation. Everybody else in your business is making stuff and selling stuff, which is really important for your business to stay going. You are a nation builder. It's not just finding a park to pick up some garbage at. Everything that we do in this corporate citizenship space with giving and volunteering, we need to be thinking hundreds and hundreds of years into the future and nation builders. You are giving experiences to people where they can become the best version of themselves and live into it, and then give that to their family and friends and spread it across the country. Tell me if I'm wrong, Janelle, but typically CSR practitioners, corporate citizenship practitioners, kind of feel like they have to fight for their right to be there, right? To justify their existence, because it's about widgets and making money. But the bigness of their role, that's a heavy thing to carry, you know, that's a big responsibility.
But the moment that we're in right now, I think, is the moment that CSR practitioners need to be blowing it out. Never before have we been invited to the table to weigh in on as many things as we're being invited for right now. I think the tide has been shifting with, you know, Larry Fink, and, you know, so the tide's been shifting for a while in terms of moving from a nice to have to a strategic business imperative. So I feel like we're all kind of there, but it's the, okay, now that we're there, how does it actually show up? And I feel like over the last 18 months, how it shows up is what's really changing. And to your point, and I absolutely love, you know, the point around being nation builders, that is oftentimes what drives corporate citizenship practitioners. The fact that they realize that they can harness their employees' enthusiasm and passions and interests and turn them into an agent of change. When I was, you know, a fundraiser, and even when I was on the corporate side myself, my mindset was always, I didn't necessarily care exactly what an employee was going to do. I just wanted to make sure that I gave them all of the possible information that they could need to make that decision as to whether or not to give or to volunteer. So even if they left the company that I was supporting from a fundraising standpoint, they would hopefully be a donor at the other company. Or if they left my company that I was working with when I was doing employee engagement, you know, then they would be a volunteer at the next company that they went to. Why? Because something inside of them had been activated to understand the importance of corporate citizenship, standing up, making a difference. And it had nothing to do with the bells and whistles of the actual program I was offering at the time.
Yeah, because they've internalized all the intrinsic motivation. It's that kind of coming together of who I am with this thing, with this, it's my identity. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't need a hat at that point.
Exactly. So to that point, Chris, what do you think that every, you know, corporate citizenship practitioner really needs to be thinking about right now? We're halfway through 2021, which is insane to me. So as we think about the rest of the year, we even think about, you know, we're in 2021, we're tracking towards 2030 and the SDGs, which I know you were a big part of Impact 2030. What should practitioners be thinking about?
Probably what we have been thinking about in the past, except now I think there's a big light on it, and maybe like you said a few minutes ago, a lot of opportunity to come to the table and to show up, right? Mm-hmm. This is the moment, or a moment. There'll be other moments, but this is your moment for the time that you're going to have the role. And it is, if your CSR corporate citizenship program is fairly early on, like it's mostly about, paperwork, counting hours, collecting data, but you're not proactively creating space to take that next step. How do we move from collecting data and talking about what we do to actually proactively creating space to have that experience and to begin to learn for those individuals? Because that's important. And you mentioned Larry Fink a few minutes ago. It's important when we start to stand up and talk like that, that we can look behind us, and everybody standing behind us goes, well, I know what he's talking about, because that's what I think too. And I think I live it, right? I wonder in some of these companies, if after making the big statement, you look behind and people are like, yeah, we make widgets and we sell money. Dude, I don't know what this is about, but it's a great marketing angle. Like that is not what you want happening from behind you. So you have to give everybody an opportunity to get in on your language by having experience so that they can internalize it and find their own words for what you're saying. And if we're not doing that work, you come across like a performative ally a little bit, right? Like our brand says, we think there should be more equity in the community and in the world, but we're not changing our pay bands or our pay structures. Blah, blah, blah. Like it, this again is the hard work of going back and doing the internal work, but that's my hard work too. It's 52-year-old white male. It's like an awful, awful process to dig around in all of the junk that I have going on inside of me. But I can't do this if I'm not willing to do that. And companies can't do this if they're not willing to do that as well. So I think that's a big consideration when we're thinking about this journey. But if you can move from that, we're collecting data and talking about what we do, to we're proactively creating space for people to have these experiences so that the people behind me are saying what I'm saying and have their own words for it, you can begin to go to the next phase, which would be in citizenship, which would be one that you were talking about, which is a very engaged, integrated. Now we're kind of doing this, and the warp and woof of it is connected. It's like moving from the bean, which you can pick, to a bag of beans in a grocery store, which has more value, to making a cup of coffee at the corner store on the way to work, which has more value, to Starbucks, which is an experience, right? Mm-hmm. So when I talk about engagement, we're talking about now we're not just thinking of serving you coffee, giving you an opportunity to go in the community and do a program, giving you an experience where you're on a journey of understanding and self-revelation, the internal work, which allows me to move past performative ally to true ally. That's where you're going. That you can't skip one of these stages. You kind of have to move through them, but you're going past program to something that feels a lot more like belonging. And then ultimately you want to get up into transformative stage of corporate citizenship where, our people are the product. And at that true state, you're at that nation building, we're great kind of space. I don't know if anybody can really stay there forever, but I see that. That's so the answer to your question, where do I see, what would I say to people looking in the future? Mm-hmm. The era of service around corporate citizenship, we're all moving past that. You got to catch up. Like don't feel bad if that's where you're entering, but you got to get there because we're all moving to experience from there. We're actually going to get serious about it, this transformative approach to community investment where we're all changed by it and we pass the new normal on to the future generation.
From your research, what do you think today employees are expecting from their programs though?
Depends on who you're talking about. That's a good question. If you're talking about people, most of us don't formally volunteer. So if you take acts of kindness out and you think about a formal directed structured experience, the data says, one out of five American adults do that, for example. And then data, I know there's a bunch of different data sets in Canada, but having worked in the nonprofit sector, we're not overrun with volunteers in Canada either. So if you've never volunteered, you're looking for a good time. Like I just want to go out and I want to see what the scene's like. I want to have a good time. I want to meet some people. I want to have some fun. I want to feel good. Give people in that first stage a great experience. Give them an opportunity to fall in love with this new idea of volunteering. Because most of us, we know about it. We've heard the word. We're not morons, but we've never actually gone and tried it. Have a good experience and then an invitation to come back. Now, if you're talking about people who are volunteering multiple times, 3-4 times a year, and they maybe are about 50 to 100 hours, that group needs a chance to be developed. They're getting emotionally engaged. To Janelle's point earlier, they've moved from an extrinsic to intrinsic motivation, and now they need to be developed, opportunities to lead, opportunities to step out, to define themselves in the doing of the thing. That's really important in terms of identity shaping. They are taking on an identity in that second stage. The third stage, they're now inviting other people to find their identity. They're in that third guide stage. And that's a small group of people. But I would say if you're talking to those second stage people, they need an entirely different message than come on out. It's going to be a lot of fun. They're like, yeah, I have serious work to do, man. Like it does sound like fun and maybe I'll come, but this is me. It's about expressing myself. So you have to meet people at their highest level of contribution.
I think it's such an important point, meeting them at their highest level of contribution. We tend at Benevity to talk about people along a spectrum. You know, the reality, there's not a one size fits all model. So, I mean, Chris, I love that you just said, you know, where your employee kind of the, you know, dipping their toe in to your, you know, mid-level employee who needs to be more developed, even how you communicate about your program to those employees has to be different because you're trying to get your communications to really resonate to hopefully inspire some level of action, right? But I don't necessarily think that all practitioners think about their employees and in that segmented way. They tend to say, we're doing a campaign, this is what we need to put out. What have your observations been in that regard?
I would say, okay, so nobody, there might be somebody. There are a very small, small number of people who have the job in CSR, corporate citizenship, related to the people part, not the environmental stuff, because I know there are programs and training for that, and there has been for a little while now. But there are not many of us who are in this role because I went to university to get this role. Like it wasn't like a master's in corporate citizenship. I don't even know if that exists. Maybe it does. But you know what I mean? Like most of us came from communication or marketing, never sales, almost never sales. Yeah, that's it. Communication and marketing. So in that mindset, I think of the transaction. I think of the thing that moved the mark on from not to buy, see my pickles, to the, whatever it may be, and communication to be sticky and for it to be something you want to rent real estate in people's minds. And you know what I mean with the messaging? I'm saying this all wrong. I'm sure all of your marketers and communication people just hung up. But what I am going to say is that mindset is exactly the wrong mindset. Yeah. A great communication, a great logo, a great billboard always helps, but it's authenticating the real message. It's not the real message. That medium is not the message. If it is, if a flat screen in your lobby is the message, the medium is the message, then that's all you've got a program. You're back in that early stage and probably collecting data, maybe offering a service and you're announcing a service. You want people who embody the message, who live it out. You want that champion network to be your primary distribution. And when they're standing in the lobby talking to somebody about the event, that person can look over and see an authentication of what I'm saying because the brand is saying, yes, what he's doing, that we authenticate that. But it is not the primary invitation, and it can never be for this kind of thing. But if you're selling pickles, maybe it'll work. But that we're not, those are two different things. This is, you know, about my identity. The other one's, well, I guess if I really like a pickle, it could be part of my identity.
Perhaps. why do you think that some companies are really missing the boat? Is it because of know-how? Is it because of culture? Is it because of business orientation to the work? Like what is so difficult about this piece, would you say, Chris?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the reason businesses were invented in the corporation back in the Roman Empire. This is the entity that makes stuff and sells stuff. That's what it's for. And now there's this citizenship piece in here because we're no longer in the feudal system or serfs or massive factories during the Industrial Revolution. The whole workspace has evolved. So the thing that we started way back when, where we could, you know, use people like machines until we invented machines, that's kind of gone now. So, but we still have the vestige of a model given to us that's really good at that and not really built to give away stuff, make the world better by, you know what I mean? Like even the whole competition, do or die, you know, make the most money, grow every year. That whole structure isn't necessarily conducive to it. So I find that the business, the private enterprise system is always trying to get rid of the limb that doesn't, the graft on is, that's what I would think. But this era now is maybe going to be reshaping the corporation in some fundamental systemic ways.
I think so. I mean, I feel like, I know you said earlier that we're going back, and I feel like we might go back to certain things, but I feel like certain things are going to remain. So the focus on mental health in the workplace, I don't.
Oh, you're talking about when you said, you know, are we at a new kind of plateau? And how did you say that? Just in case the listener's thinking, oh, what was this? It sounds like they're having an argument. This sounds good now.
No, definitely not. I asked if where we are right now, the evolution that we've seen over the last year in our space, if you think they will remain. And I think, no, we're likely going to go back to many of the things. So I agree with you to a certain extent. I also feel like there are elements in the company structure that have changed, and the changes will remain, like a focus on mental health, like a focus on belonging. You know, even the fact of, you know, with all things being equal, consumer decisions, you know, they're looking at how a company perhaps aligns to their values. You know, Edelman Trust Survey last year looked at companies now as the most trusted institution.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that was crazy. That was crazy. Yes. Yeah.
I feel like there are some changes that will stay, and hopefully what that then means for how practitioners feel about their ability to drive the work within their company, I think that they'll hopefully feel a little bit more supported, I think.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I would say I answered incorrectly. I was thinking, I think my initial point of view was how our, as a civilization, we've dealt with the power imbalance, especially as we think of a group of white individuals who used to own black individuals, and the back and forthness of that, you know, even over the past century. But you've made some points that I would totally agree with. I think those structural systemic changes that we're bringing into the company now, I think you're right. They will last because previous ones have lasted and have definitely shaped us. So I would agree with that.
Very cool. Well, I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see. We'd love to have you back in the future to see, you know, at the end of 2021.
Wait, it's not over. Is it over? Are you wrapping up right now? I feel like we're just getting going.
I think we could talk for hours on end, but, you know, I guess one final question I do have for you is, you know, for a company who is either just getting started or a company who feels like they are on the cusp of change, what recommendations do you have for that corporate citizenship practitioner who, you know, is holding up the sword there? They're fighting the good fight. What advice do you have for them?
Oh, man, it's not only a good question, but I think I think the answer merits more consideration than I'm about to give it, just because of the importance of the role of these individuals. So maybe that's what I would say. I would say the most important thing, the most important decision you can make in your role is to assume the true burden of the role. And if we are nation builders, if that is the private sector with the influence, with these large populations, with the ability to influence giving nationally by how we suggest things or what we say as a company, try on the full burden of it. Go past an event. Go past the simple numbers. You're never going to leave them, but you can move past them. But at the same time, make sure that you have people in your community who can help you bear that burden, because it's not yours to carry alone. Mm-hmm. It's all of ours. And you need to find your people to help you carry that burden. As you carry their burden, it becomes lighter as well. But this is something that we're in together. And just be open to how important is this role? Just ask yourself that question. How important is this role really? Like, think way bigger. Allow your mind to go way beyond what you've ever thought before. Maybe what everybody else in the company has been suggesting, or what your in-laws say when you go over to their place and they ask you what you do for a living. You say employee volunteering, and they say, isn't volunteering free? Why do people pay you for that? Forget all of that. Forget it. And imagine how big it is, because it's bigger than we can imagine, I think, the role.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think just the last point around nation builders, you know, in the last year have been having so many conversations about DE&I in the workplace and the ability to transform outside of the workplace. Because you know, at the end of the day, we are all people who exist in the world. So if we are educated within our workplace around some of these most pressing social justice issues, we are then having different conversations with our family our friends around the dinner table. But to your point, even, you know, if I go out and have a really fantastic volunteer experience and I'm like, wow, here is something that I can make a difference on, I should tell my family and friends, you know, then we are, to your point, there's the ability of the internal becoming the external, mm-hmm. and really driving, to your point, this building of a nation, these nation builders who can actually transform our world. So I think that's a great note to end our conversation on, Chris.
Very well said. Thank you, Janelle. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you in our next episode.
Thank you for listening to The Social Impact Show. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Then visit benevity.com to access some of the resources mentioned in this episode, along with tons of other insights to help you grow your program. Music provided by Ikeson. For questions or topics you want us to cover, reach us at podcast@benevity.com. Until next time, be a force for good.